I'm Peter Gray, and I'm here with Dr. Dixon DePommier, an emeritus professor at Columbia University in New York. And Dr. DePommier, I wanted first for our listeners to define the term vertical farming.
I can tell you what my definition is, but I think you're going to find a variety of those definitions if you go on the internet. So we originally conceived this idea in a classroom. This was a theoretical project that we started in one of my classes at Columbia University's School of Public Health. And so the original idea was to take the idea of a high-tech greenhouse, which everybody can associate with, and take that idea and make it into a two-story building. Once you've made a two-story building, it's now a vertical farm. So high-tech greenhouses are all over the place. They're not only on the ground, but you can find them on rooftops as well, and there's tons of examples of them. Why don't we just take that idea and take it to the next step, so to speak, by making them taller and more productive? In fact, when you add another story onto a greenhouse, it becomes twice as productive. So that's basically my definition. It doesn't really have to be 20 stories tall to qualify as a vertical farm. It just has to be two stories or taller.
In your book, Vertical Farming, Feeding the World in the 21st Century, you say hydroponics, aeroponics, and drip irrigation methods, and I'd throw in aquaponics as well in there, have improved vastly over the last 10 years. What evidence do you have to back up that statement?
Well, all you have to do is go visit one. I mean, I can now take you to a variety of operations, starting in the middle of the Arizona desert. And in fact, there is a picture of that operation called Eurofresh Farms. They've been in operation now for about 10 years. They're in the middle of a place where you shouldn't be able to farm. They're right in the middle of the very driest region of Arizona. So there's no water. There's tons of sunlight. And there's no soil, basically. So what they've done is they've established these high-tech hydroponic greenhouses to the tune of 318 acres worth. They've drilled deep down into the ground to find enough water to supply for their hydroponic growth systems. They grow primarily tomatoes of various varieties, but they also grow other things, too. And they're diversifying their produce as we speak, in fact. They're quite successful. So that's one example of a high-tech greenhouse. Now, if they were to move closer to where I live, and instead of spreading out over 318 acres, maybe 3.8 acres, and take those greenhouses and stack them on top of each other, employing the same technologies, you got yourself a vertical farm.
You strike me as an urbanite.
I am, but I'm a suburbanite primarily. And why don't you ask me what my hobby is? I love trout fishing. I escape into the wilds of, you know, some really interesting places because I really do appreciate the natural surroundings of the real world. I'm obviously an academic that teaches at a city school, and so my orientation is towards urban affairs and urban lifestyle. So that's the reason why I wrote this book, because I can see the urban landscape parasitizing the rural landscape for its resources. If cities and the rural surroundings can't learn to live in harmony rather than in this parasitic relationship that we've evolved into as urban dwellers, you have to start to make some choices here as to how much further encroachment into the natural world we're willing to go before we admit that we have to do it in a different way. And that's when vertical farming comes in. What if farms in cities could supply food for city dwellers? That's basically the premise of my thesis.
I've been speaking with Dr. Dixon DePommier at Columbia University in New York. He's the author of The Vertical Farm, Feeding the World in the 21st Century. You also say in your book that the vertical farm is a, quote, neighborhood concept couched in futuristic terms, but with a homespun intent. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, in fact, that's what's happening to it in many places. What I mean by that is that when you confront somebody with the concept of raising food inside of a building, they're going to look at you, A, like you're crazy and you can't do that, as most of my students did, by the way, because they weren't all from cities. Some of them came from rural areas as well. Or they will say, oh, you mean hothouse potatoes and tomatoes and green beans and stuff, and they understood the concept. So to have to understand, to have to say that to people that are not used to thinking about farming in a non-traditional fashion, you have to show them examples of this and scalability and why it should be, let's say, in situations where when you're in the wintertime, for instance, and you're not into canning or preserving foods in another way, you can still produce food. There is no reason in the world why you can't still grow your own food, why a smaller version of a vertical farm couldn't be associated with individual houses, for instance, or a small living complexes like apartment houses that are not more than 3 or 4 stories tall. This is not just a big city idea. It could be spread way out into the suburbs and perhaps even into individual homes, no matter where you live. To see good examples of that, just visit Japan. They've had this terrible event, the tsunami that came through when they had that awful earthquake in 2011. That completely changed the way they look at their lives as to how fragile their lives really are, how dependent upon natural systems they really are. They lost about 5% of their farmland in that one event. Japan can't afford to lose that much. I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot of land, but 5% of the American heartland would be an enormous amount of land to lose, all in one day. So they have shifted their emphasis of making fresh produce to these grow systems, which can be insinuated into grocery stores. They've made individual grow systems for the home that look like refrigerators. You open them up and they're growing lettuces and various green leafy vegetables. It's not corn and soybeans, I agree here. These are products that you eat on a daily basis and they're not turned into value-added products. So that's the kind of crops I'm talking about.
Given the population density of cities like Tokyo, I mean, we're looking at people who are living closer together than perhaps humans have ever lived.
You might be right. I mean, I'm sure that Tokyo is a big player in this, but if you go into the suburbs of Japan and some less densely populated cities, you can go into the grocery stores and find these systems available so that you can walk into a grocery store, slide the door open in the green grocer section, put a plastic bag over an item that you want, take the scissors and cut it off, close up the bag, take it back up to the counter, pay for it, bring it home and eat it within an hour. It doesn't get fresher than that, and it's very safe. Obviously, there's no worry about food diseases, food-borne illnesses, I should say. There's no worry about losing nutrition because of storage and shipping. There's no loss from that, so you can save on fossil fuels a lot. So there are a lot of good reasons for wanting to do it, especially if you live in a densely populated area.
You mentioned Monsanto. You mentioned
sure.
Cargill.
Sure.
I'm situated in Springfield, Illinois,
yep.
Between ADM in Decatur, Illinois, and Monsanto down in St. Louis, Missouri.
Of course, of course.
So I just wonder, is there a role for them in vertical farming?
Absolutely.
You talk about nutrient film technology,
which
has to do with hydroponics.
That's right.
Do they have a place at the table?
I would love them to have a larger place at the table. I know they have a place at the table because that's how they check out all their modified crops that they're producing. Every one of those crops has to go through a number of hoops before they're even willing to tell the public that they've got it developed. And that's all done in greenhouses, every bit of it. And it's done in secure greenhouses, too, so that nothing escapes. There are numbers of people out there that are so dead against genetically modified anything that they're blindsided by this concept because, to be honest with you, everything we eat has been genetically modified either by the laboratory manipulating something or by us selecting the biggest and the best for the next generation of plants that we want to grow. Every single crop has been done like that since the invention of farming, which was about 10,000 years ago. So I think that if a company like Monsanto said, you know, we're going to start growing our corn in tall buildings, and we're going to use dwarf corn to do this because you can grow it very, very easily. We can get a continuous production this way. We don't have to worry about the weather. We don't have to worry about planting it in soils. We can use these tall buildings as our laboratories, as our manufacturing centers, and we can proceed without upsetting anybody's apple cart, no pun intended. I would love to see them try something like that because they've got the resources to actually develop this to the next level.
Dr. Dixon DePommier is an emeritus professor of microbiology and public health and environmental health sciences at Columbia University in New York. Dr. DePommier, I wanted to close with John Lennon in a song. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Do you find anybody getting behind you on your dream?
Well, the dream is now a reality. I think John Lennon would write another lyric for that one because the vertical farm concept started as theoretical discussion in a small classroom in 1999, and today I can take you around the world and show you examples of vertical farms everywhere. So They're all throughout Japan. There are multiple levels of these in Korea. There's some in China. There's in the Middle East, in Europe, in the United States, in Canada, and there are many, 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 many more on the way. This is a movement that somebody has to reckon with. If they're against it, you better start protesting now because it's on the way.